Humble Holding Up is sponsored by Fat Bowl Clothing.
So, Goff, you know that I am a big fashion lover.
Yes, I'm aware.
And you also wear clothing.
Often.
So, have you checked out Fat Bowl Clothing in Arcata yet?
Ooh, you know, it's been a bit. Why don't you tell me about that, Steph?
Well, it's this awesome shop in Arcata. They have their own unique clothing print designs. They've got shirts, hats, hoodies, you know, all that stuff that you need to wear in Humboldt. They also do custom screen printing.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can rock your own design or rep for your company or your, you know, bowling team or whatever it is that you're into.
My bowling team has looked a little shabby lately, so this comes as great news.
I thought that it might. Fat Bowl Clothing is at 1618 G Street in Northtown Arcata, or you can check them out online at fatbol.com.
It's Humble Holding Up, the only humble podcast that invites you to tune in, turn on, and drop out. Is that how that goes? I can't remember. My name is Andrew Goff.
And I'm Stephanie McGarry. It's been a fun and event week of news in Humboldt and at the Outpost, as usual.
Tell me more.
Oh, yeah, sure. We've always got lots of stuff going on. But I think one of the more probably fun things that happened in the last week is that the Arcata City Council unanimously passed a resolution basically stating that they don't want the police there to arrest people for possessing or using psychedelic plants and fungi. So magic mushrooms, ayahuasca, mescaline, stuff like that. They're saying, hey, basically, like, we're cool with this, you know, within reason, as long as you're not causing any problems.
Yeah.
You know, and it's had a lot of support from the public.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting, you framed this as this is a fun story. And that's interesting because I agree with you.
Yeah.
I wonder though, like if the people that are, you know, super invested in this as an issue, I mean, do they think it's fun or are they very, you know, righteous in their you know, pushing this into, you know, we're kind of in this moment where psychedelics are being, you know, reassessed and I don't know. We should talk to somebody about this. What
yes.
About that?
Perhaps my framing it as fun, some people might think as a little flippant, but you know what? Like as far as a story, it's fun.
Yeah, and it's fun.
But yeah, today we have City Council member Sarah Schaefer, who placed this item on the agenda. She's been very vocally in support of it all along. Yeah, maybe she can answer that question for us. Is this fun?
Are mushrooms fun? Is it okay to call them that now that we just do them all the time, apparently?
That's what's going to happen. So why don't we get her in here and let her be the one to...
Come on in, Sarah.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going great. I think you and I may have briefly spoken, if I remember correctly, like as you were launching your campaign. I think you called and talked to me at Loco for something, but you know, we haven't talked at length.
Yes, I remember,
Okay, yeah. And I was asking Steph, you know, before this, I was like, well, so you've talked to Sarah a lot more than me. Like, what's she like? Is she cool? And the thing that Steph
said yes,
came up
by
with.
The way.
Say, okay, you know, sounds good.
But the evidence that she had for why you were cool is like, did you know that Sarah Schaefer, when she was 7 years old, won the oyster calling contest at the Arcata Oyster Festival?
I did. And I would say that is an early claim to fame. And also like the reason that I am a true representation of Arcata. My sister and I did a duet to the tune of the Spice Girls song, If You Want to Be My Lover, but if you want to be my oyster, you got to get with my sauce. I don't remember
all
the words,
but nice.
Something like that. And we took first prize. I do remember getting a very nice gift basket from Bubbles. That's all I really remember. But
Sarah, you really expect me to believe that you do not remember how the song went that you want your...
I was 7 years old. I don't know. And I would ask my sister, but she's older than me, but has a way worse memory. So
I was going to say, so can we get her on the Zoom right now and have you guys do a...
Well, we won't press you too hard on that because we have, of course, much more pressing issues today. You know, why we wanted to have you here today. So let's just get into the shroom chat, shall we? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right off the bat.
No. Yeah. So,
I'm excited. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so this resolution that was unanimously passed by your council, broadly just says, you know, the city of Arcata Police Department, you're not going to expend any more energy on people who use or possess entheogenic plants, which are a lot of the psychedelics people know, your psilocybin mushrooms, ayahuasca, mescaline, et cetera. I don't think, you know, that going after people that use these things was exactly like a top public safety priority before this resolution passed, at least not in my memory. But this all comes at a time when there's, you know, a lot of talk about reassessing how we view these plants, you know, what therapeutic applications they might have. Lots of studies seem to indicate that they have a positive impact on people dealing with past trauma. Michael Pollan has written a couple of books now that look into these issues.
Yay, oh, you have it. Got it.
I'm reading one of them right now. Yeah. That was my summer reading.
Nice job. So, you know, a few other cities had already gone down similar decriminalization paths. And if I understand this right, you are the council member who really made this a priority and got this in front of the council. And so I wonder, why did you think this was important?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, it was definitely something that I heard a lot of people, especially, you know, younger people who I communicated a lot with in our community were interested in and definitely supported and wanted to see, especially, you know, following in the footsteps of Oakland, Santa Cruz, other cities all around the country, you know, who were doing similar things. I mean, the entire state of Oregon as well. So, I mean, there seems to be a lot of interest, and Decriminalized Nature, which is a national organization, they've been involved in these decriminalization movements in a few other cities, and have worked, you know, as a group with these other cities that have worked on decriminalization. And their group was getting pretty active in Humboldt. They had been out at the farmers market every Saturday. And so I just started talking to them, and they, you know, said, would you be interested in something like this? And I said, oh yeah, I mean, I've heard plenty of people that have been in support of it. And you know, kind of the real reason I, you know, feel it's so important. And like you said, yeah, it's obviously not a huge law enforcement priority in our community. And so, you know, how much of a change is it really going to make? But I think it's a really important ideological stand, you know, against the war on drugs and against, you know, the fact that we have, you know, vilified any drug and anybody who uses them, you know, basically since the 1970s. It took a lot to get marijuana first medically and then recreationally legalized, and, you know, now tons of states across the country. And so I think it's just another move in that positive direction of stepping away from that ridiculous just say no culture. And, you know, also, I mean, plants like psilocybin, like mescaline, like ayahuasca have been used in traditional ceremonies for religious purposes, for rites of passage, and, you know, for cultural events, for societies, for, you know, millennia. And so, you know, it just doesn't make sense that, you know, these plants and fungi would be illegal and would be, you know, such the center of controversy. And especially now, I mean, we're seeing, you know, they did studies back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. And then, of course, all of that died out during the war on drugs, and everything was a hard no. But now we're seeing, you know, back in, I think, 2006, they got the okay to start medically, you know, testing again with psilocybin, and seeing really positive effects on addiction, PTSD, you know, other mental disorders that a lot of people in our own community suffer from. And so I think it's a really, you know, it's an important step in saying, hey, this is a medicine that we can try. This is, you know, something that you can safely try within our community. Decriminalized Nature is now going to kind of be evolving themselves into the Humboldt Psychedelic Society and be, you know, working on putting on more educational events, and kind of, you know, just educating the community too about, you know, especially there were some concerns in the meeting last night, especially from Mayor Watson, just about like dosage and about like, you know, people understanding that there can be negative side effects. But, you know, what I really think the group is doing, especially in our community, is to work towards educating people on, you know, what a good dosage for you might be, depending on what experience you want. And, you know, basically being able to have people have a nice, safe, comfortable place to be able to, you know, be guided if they want to, you know, through taking these plants and fungi. So,
yeah. when you said, well, look, what was the name of the group that now they're psychedelics?
Humboldt Psychedelic Society.
Humboldt Psychedelic Society. And so that's different than Decriminalized Nature Humboldt, but sort of the same folks. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Or? Well, they've now decriminalized nature, so they will evolve into something else, but still want to say, you know, still have that same, you know, presence in the community and be out there educating people. And they put on a couple events because that was, you know, after the first reading of the resolution and before, you know, we made some changes and edits with the police chief and with city staff and stuff. You know, we'd like to see some more education happening in the community. Yeah. And so they put on a couple events. They had some speakers come and showed a couple of different documentaries over at the ballpark. And they're going to continue to do events like that. And then while also having, you know, some of their folks trained in these like naturopathic guide
training.
They exist. I don't exactly know the proper term for them, but, you know, to be trained to, you know, help guide somebody through a psilocybin experience.
Right. So, yeah. Now, to be clear, because this was something that I think was sort of touched on maybe in the previous meeting, like back in July, like, if they're having something like that, if it were in a public space, giving actually offering some of the plant to use, like that would not be allowed under this, right? Is that part of like when we say the private use, like it means you can't just, you know, necessarily be like openly taking mushrooms or ayahuasca or something, like, you know, just on the on the plaza.
Exactly. And it is for, you know, private use for consenting adults 21 and up, and, you know, being very specific about that language just to, you know, get around any loopholes. But, you know, this is also just it's a resolution. It's not like an ordinance. This isn't the law. It's a suggestion to our law enforcement of how, you know, the council wants the police department to prioritize cases like this. You know, there has been some issues in Oakland since their decriminalization with, you know, commercial sales and production and, you know, people seeing that as an open ticket to sell mushrooms to whoever they want to. But, you know, that's not really the aim of it. The aim is to more, you know, step away from that law enforcement presence and to be able to offer, you know, healing sessions like this, or, you know, people to, you know, invite folks to their home, to their office setting, whatever it might be, to partake. So, and to be able to provide that education, because a lot of people, you know, do say, yeah, I want to try mushrooms, I want to try mescaline, and, you know, take it and don't have anybody to help them or guide them, or aren't even able to access information about it, and might have a bad experience, when in reality, you know, it can be a very positive and therapeutic experience for a lot of people. So,
something I found interesting that you mentioned in your article, Steph, is just how you mentioned that, you know, at the first July meeting, when you were first discussing this, you know, a couple of the council members had expressed reservations about it at the time, but then, you know, this week ultimately voted in favor of this resolution. And I wonder, like, you know, I wonder if there were, if you played a part in that, like, I wonder if you, you know, initiated conversations with them or you know, swayed them in any way, or, you know, why do you think they came around on this issue?
Well, I mean, yeah, I actually didn't talk to them, because you're only allowed to talk to one person, violation of the Brown Act. Okay. You're not allowed to have conversations about one thing with more than, you know, one other council member about it. So, but I would, you know, put a lot of that on the work done by Decriminalized Nature themselves. They worked really closely with both the police chief and with City Manager Deemer, and a little bit with myself, back and forth, you know, with edits of things, updating the resolution just to get it to a point, you know, where everybody was comfortable. It also went to our public safety committee, and they voted 3 in favor, no against, 1 abstention. So pretty much almost unanimously, basically, voted to support the resolution, as long as we just added parameters around, education, and just making sure to, you know, add that clear part that, 21 and up. You know, like marijuana, like alcohol, you know, anything like that. And so, you know, I think just really putting it through the process, giving, you know, those council members more time to talk to the public, to talk to Decriminalized Nature, to, you know, work through the differences, you know, that they might have seen, what they wanted to see in the resolution, going through, you know, back and forth edits for, you know,
yeah.
a couple months really. And, you know, I think once they got to a place and saw how much, you know, the community supported it, that the police department felt comfortable with it, that the public safety committee felt comfortable with it, that we were in a place where, yeah, we were ready to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's understandable, you know, to have the, like, even at last night's meeting, like you said, Mayor Watson still, you know, wanted to add some additional language, just feeling like a little concerned about, you know, dosage and people just taking this as an opportunity to just like go out there and experiment without maybe, you know, doing it very intentionally. And, you know, these are, like you said, they're really powerful mind-altering substances that can under the wrong circumstances give people a kind of terrifying experience. And I think that, you know, a lot of people in Arcata probably remember about a decade ago, we had, you know, a guy on LSD. And I do know, you know, LSD is not one of the substances that is decriminalized under this resolution, but, you know, this guy had a bad trip and believed that there were monsters or something in his testicles. And
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. If people don't remember how that ended up, they can look it up on their own. We won't go too deep into it. Needless to say, it was not great. No. Not a great thing, but you know, I mean, you talked a lot about how these substances, you know, when they are approached, you know, sort of correctly and with guidance, you know, can be really helpful for mental health issues. But then also, you know, I think that people that have some underlying mental health issues or are susceptible to them,
yeah,
you know, they can be dangerous as well. I mean, do you think that there should be maybe more than just like some language in the solution to sort of address that aspect? I mean, should there be additional regulation?
I think we made sure to add a little bit of the language just around, like, you know, make sure that you are taking it in a safe therapeutic setting, knowing that if you do take too much, that it could have negative and perhaps long-lasting effects. You know, these should be taken in the presence of somebody that has experience as a you know, a medical professional, a mentor, a shaman, we outline a couple different, you know, mm-hmm. types of people that would be accredited to help lead you through these experiences. But also more and more, I mean, what's becoming popular for people too is the idea of microdosing, of like taking a very small dose that would not, you know, take you to that extreme mind altering, perhaps like reality shattering and terrifying experience that you could have as well. Which is, you know, a lot of time what's being recommended for folks that might, you know, just suffer from depression or maybe alcoholism, something that they deal with on a day-to-day basis, to just have a slight mood altering. We also had a really interesting public comment from a woman who talked about her, you know, success of overcoming postpartum depression from microdosing psilocybin. Yeah. So, you know, there's tons of different ways to take it, different amounts that you can take, depending on the experience that you want to have. And, you know, for somebody that might just be looking for a slight mood boost or a mood altering, they don't need to take, you know, a bunch and have that reality shattering religious seeing God moment that, you know, you hear about sometimes from studies or from, you know, I've been reading Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind book. And like, you know, some of the experiences that they talk about are, yeah, that like, you know, breaking down the barriers of the ego and being able to see the true self and really significant, you know, life-altering moments, but also, you know, the success of how you can see people just overcoming daily addictions or daily depression by taking small doses. So,
Well now, Sarah, I thought, you know, in the interest of education, you know, maybe we could just bring this down to a more personal level and ask you, Councilmember Schaefer. I mean, have you had positive experiences with these substances? Like, do you feel comfortable telling us about your great ego-destroying trips or like?
Maybe not comfortable telling you about my great ego-destroying trip, no. But I mean, you know, I wouldn't be such a positive advocate of this stuff if I hadn't seen, at least not, you know, I haven't seen negative effects in people that I know that have taken them and myself in times that I have, you know, been guided on trips like this. Okay. And I've seen, you know, people in my own personal life, a very close friend of mine, you know, really overcome some severe depression and alcohol addiction through microdosing and just kind of replacing that habit with a small microdose to just kind of change their mindset. I did not have the chance to do it, though I actually kind of regret, but in college I spent a semester in Ecuador and took an anthropology class and did, as you know, a history major, a lot of study into the use of ayahuasca and shamanic experiences in the Amazon, and learned a ton of history of that and really was fascinated by it. Unfortunately, I did not get the chance to do that, but you know, to also read and understand, I mean, the historical and important religious and cultural context that a lot of these, you know, plants play also is just, you know, fascinating to me. And one of the main reasons I'm a supporter of this as well. So,
but you say you have had a guided experience?
No.
I thought that's what you said.
Not an ego shattering guided experience, but I hope now that, you know, this is out in the open and then humbled and decriminalized, and that we're going to have this psychedelic society, that, you know, I'll be able to go see my friends at Decriminalized Nature and perhaps, you know, find somebody to take you through it. Cause it does, you know, that you can take a handful of mushrooms at a festival and have a great time. But I don't think you'll get the same thing out of it. You know, that same therapeutic experience out of it as you would, you know, having somebody guide you, having somebody ask you the right questions of, you know, oh, you're thinking about that. Why are you thinking about that? How does that make you feel? Let's break that down, you know, while you're doing it. So.
Well, we've mentioned, you know, Michael Pollan a couple times already, who I would argue is perhaps, you know, the most famous person actively engaging in these questions. And, you know, I wonder, you know, you held up which of the two books that he's written did you
How hold to up Change Your Mind.
Okay. And then what is the other one called? Something about
the
plants.
Botany of Desire.
Right.
Well, that's an old there was one he did earlier this year too. But anyway, I just wondered, like, you know, what if you're interested, like what were some of the more interesting aspects of that book that you found, the How to Change Your Mind?
What I found interesting about it, because he talks a lot, because he hadn't really experimented with drugs like this in his younger years and wasn't as, you know, familiar with psychedelic drugs. And being an older person who had a lot of life experiences and maybe didn't necessarily know how to unpack them or hadn't dealt with childhood traumas, you know, and to even take them as an older person at like a turning point in your life, he kind of basically said, like, if you're having a midlife crisis, it might be a good idea to have an experience like this, basically, because, you know, and you often think of, you know, this associated with young people out partying or something like that, but really he brought a lot of light to, you know, the benefit that it's had on people going through midlife crises, or also a lot of people in like terminal illness, to be able, you know, people who are facing imminent death from cancer, you know, being able to grapple with that and have more understanding of what death means. So, you know, that's something that I really thought was interesting that I got out of it. But, and then also, you know, I learned a lot about the history aspect of it too. He especially talks about a case study of like back in the 50s, some guy from Life magazine went down to Mexico and, you know, was probably one of the first white people that this tribe in southern Mexico had ever seen. And he went and did psilocybin with them and wrote about it in Life magazine in the 1950s before these drugs were demonized by the government, before, you know, the whole counterculture movement started and everybody's like, oh no, hippies take shrooms, hippies take acid, hippies smoke pot and they're evil. So therefore, you know, these drugs need to be outlawed. And so just to kind of see the open-mindedness that existed around it before the war on drugs and before the counterculture movement, of course, me being a history teacher, history major, of course the history aspect stood out to me as well. You know, and even going all the way back to Cortez coming to Mexico and the conquistadors and saying, oh, you guys worship multiple gods. These shrooms are part of your religious experience. That's not the Catholic Church. That's wrong. Therefore, you know, everything that you're doing is against God and it needs to be stamped out, basically. Mm. And, you know, these people had their religion taken away from them and had their rituals taken away from them. And, you know, we can look back, 500, 600 years ago and see how, you know, these drugs were being demonized back then.
So. Yeah. I would say, like, I have not read either of the books, but I've listened to him in interviews with interest. And, you know, one of the things he talks about is how many, like, indigenous people groups have already have traditions that incorporate psychedelics with it, you know, but that it's, and as we look to how we're going to incorporate these things into society, you know, it's probably important that we craft our own kind of standards and practices and traditions around these things. You know, like he talks about how there are already like some clinics that offer like spa, like we talked about, like guided therapy. And I was wondering, like, if you, as you've had conversations with people, you know, in the community surrounding this issue, have there been people that have come to you with ideas like, you know what, we could open up this in Arcata that incorporates psilocybin or whatever. Like, is there anything that excites you or you found attractive?
I know a couple of the folks from Decriminalized Nature who are already kind of working in other holistic medicine areas are, you know, very interested in adding this into, you know, their meditations, their, you know, whatever ceremonies that they might be doing to add that in. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people from HSU too, biochemistry majors, psychology majors, who say a lot of their discussions come back to psilocybin a lot of the time. And, you know, would really, though, that another important caveat of this resolution is that it does not necessarily extend to any properties owned by the CSU, owned by HSU. Mm. Because those are state properties. But, you know, hopefully down the line, seeing some cooperation, you know, with HSU and being able to see some research done within our own community and, you know, be a leader in that. So, you know, hopefully and seeing, I mean, we have a lot of problems in this community with addiction, with mental health issues, with depression. I see it all the time, you know, with high schoolers coming from families that are torn apart by this stuff. And, you know, I think that, you know, we've tried a lot of things and we try to throw pharmaceuticals at a lot of these people and it doesn't work. And so I think that, you know, it could be, you know, a revolutionary experience for a lot of people and could provide something in our community that is different. You know, we've tried a lot of things and maybe they haven't worked for a lot of people. So let's try something else.
Yeah. What would you say to somebody that came to you? You know, you just voted on this thing. It's kind of a tacit approval of the use of these things. Like, someone said, "Hey, Sarah, I want to try mushrooms. How should I go about doing that?"
First, you got to find some. I don't know where. maybe go talk to our you know, any of your friends at Decriminalized Nature. No, I don't know. And I know a lot of people locally too. That are, you know, we have a lot of naturally occurring ones here too. Yeah. Please do not just pick any mushrooms.
Right. Another, sure.
Okay. But, you know, if you know somebody involved in mycology, we have a lot of people who are really into mycology locally. You know,
but if I say,
them, but
yeah, but if I say, like, you know, okay, so I found some. I got a hookup. And now, like, so now what do I do? What do I do with these?
I don't know. I'd say make sure you have a buddy.
Yeah.
Make sure you're in a place that you feel comfortable and you feel safe, whether that be, you know, maybe in your home or outside and at the beach or in a nice isolated place where you don't necessarily have to interact with a lot of people, that you can kind of just enjoy yourself and maybe the company of your friend and or guide. And, you know, just go into it with an open mindset and go into it in a safe and comfortable environment surrounded by people who care about you.
Okay.
And then that's the most important part of it.
And then they say, okay, well, council member, would you be my guide?
Depends on who it is.
Okay.
not to the average citizen. But I don't think I'm qualified. I think
that's when you're probably
somebody much more qualified.
You're going to send them to decriminalize nature direction
exactly,
and,
right?
and refer to them to some other.
Yeah. And right. Well done.
I mean, if nothing else, I am getting the impression that you probably just don't have a lot of extra time to be acting as guides for other
that
people.
That too. On my weekend, I want to be left alone. I don't want to be your spirit guide on a mushroom trip.
It can be
I'm sorry.
Time-consuming, you know, kind of process. It's yeah. just, you know, given it taking 6 hours, 6 to 10 Although, hours out of your day.
But maybe now my second, or maybe I guess now third career could be, you know, I could get trained to be a homeopathic psychedelic.
I gotta
guide.
Say, Shaman here, Sarah Schaefer rolls off the tongue.
It does have a nice, ring.
Okay. Maybe after my tenure, we'll see.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Hi, you know what I could really go for right now? Fat bowl
of ice cream, I assume, is what you're talking about, because that's what I know that you love.
Well, I do love ice cream, but you didn't let me finish. I was going to say,
I'm always cutting you off.
Steamrolling me all the time. I was going to say, if you would shut up for a second, a fat bowl clothing item or other piece of quality Humboldt merchandise, because I was talking about Fat Bowl, FATBO. The clothing company in Arcata.
Right.
Yes. They sell custom clothing, art supplies, gifts, and accessories. And you know what else, Goff? They also have disc golf supplies. I know how much you're into disc golf.
You know me. I love to rattle some chains. Is that what they say?
I think that that's a thing that they say.
Yeah. And if they don't, they should.
I'm pretty sure that's a thing they say, but maybe we can go ask them over at Fat Bowl Clothing, which is
You want to go rattle some chains?
Fat Bowl Clothing is on G Street in Arcata. They're right across the street from Northtown Coffee, or you can check them out online, fatbol.com.
Do it.
this subject is definitely really fun to talk about, and so we could probably go on talking about it for the next half an hour or even more. But it's of course not the only thing that you care about as a city council member. And so we thought that we would, you know, also give you a chance to talk about some other priorities for yourself and for the city of Arcata right now. You know, like, where do you feel like the city needs to be focusing its efforts? We're done with we've decriminalized nature now.
I thought that one's like for me, it's a no-brainer. It's an easy one. Decriminalize nature. And now, we did that. Let's get down to the tough issues, right? but you know, it's been wonderful. And I felt very optimistic lately. We just had the meeting about a month ago where we got to talk about how we are going to use these ARPA funds, these American Relief pandemic funds that we got from the federal government. So Arcata had about like $4.4 million to decide, you know, what projects do we want to invest in and what do we want to work on. And, you know, really our top priority areas are obviously dealing with homelessness and housing within our community. I think one of the first projects that we're going to get done and that we're really trying to move quick on is to get up and running a safe parking, safe camping space. For those who are, you know, currently living in cars, living in RVs, camping in tents, et cetera. You know, there's been a huge issue lately. We've received dozens, if not almost close to 100 emails probably from folks really concerned about the camping taking place at the Arcata Community Center parking lot. There has been an influx of, you know, people, RVs taking up like 10 spaces and people camping out in tents and in their cars there. There have been like a couple confrontations between health sport members and this, you know, group of campers. So it has been something that we've been really working on trying to at least, you know, get that area cleaned up and then, you know, move fast to say, hey, you know, you really can't camp here, but we have this space for you to go to. There's services, there's bathrooms, there's electric, you know, we're going to try to get it set up as quick as possible to get people to a safer space where they can, you know, get to the services that they need and to, you know, help clean up public space that everybody's using. To do so, you know, in a compassionate way, everybody's saying, well, why don't you just have the cops kick them out? You know, but you kick somebody out of somewhere and where do they go? They go to the next parking lot and we get the next laundry list of complaints from the next, you know, group of people. And it's not really doing anything to fix the problem. It's just putting it somewhere else. And so really trying to actually, you know, now work to fix this problem and, you know, find a safer space for these people to be, and then to also, you know, get in touch with services, we're working with Arcata House Partnership to, you know, set this up. And so I'm pretty excited about that project.
Yeah. And me too. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I hadn't thought of that as a topic today, and that watching that meeting, that was so great that I didn't even realize that that was a project that Arcata was considering right now. And so it was great to learn about that. And then just to see you put all these plans really kind of just into place and get this great list going. Where are we with that now? I mean, do you know, what are the next steps? And do you know yet if any potential spaces have been identified for doing that, and what will be like the steps council needs to take?
We've kind of like committed now, we're going to get an update like every council meeting, a kind of process on this, because we're all pretty invested in seeing this get done and working on it. Arcata House Partnership is currently finishing up their proposal of what it's going to look like, and you know, kind of nickel and diming it of how much it's going to actually cost, and you know, what the staffing needs to look like, and you know, what can we do now and what would we want to add later as infrastructure. We're going to really try to get it up and running, but eventually, you know, we'll need to run electric there, make sure that, you know, there's, you know, everybody can have access to bathroom, water, you know, everything like that. And then working with other groups, hopefully too, like AHA, for example, to get showers there maybe once a week, whatever that might look like. We're looking at a couple sites right now. I don't know if I'm privy to say, no, we're looking at a couple sites right now. They haven't really decided. One would be a little bit closer to the plaza and walking distance from Arcata House Partnership's annex, down off I Street, closer to the marsh there, in some of those kind of industrial areas where the city owns some property. Mm-hmm. And then the other, they're looking at kind of over off West End Road. But I think having it, you know, a little bit closer to downtown where people are camping and spending the night in doorways and at the community center and everything, so it's easy for them to be able to transition to this, you know, space more able to offer it, I think would be the best solution for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are kind of the next steps, waiting on that proposal and deciding on a spot. And then, you know, realistically, it sounded like hopefully within like 2 months, we could have this at least bare bones up and running. But another huge problem is, you know, being able to staff it and finding staffing, even though we have this money, we want to, you know, fund it and fund, you know, somebody to be there and be able to, you know, work there. And have also another big chunk of what we funded with these ARPA funds was adding an additional MIST worker, the kind of our social work response team that works with the police department. And so being able to have another MIST worker and then also to continue to fund that program through the next 2 years is a big part of the funds that we spent too. So being able to have, you know, those folks that know how to get services to these people, know, you know, what branches that they need to go to, get them in touch with DHSS, whatever it might be, to, you know, get them into housing, to get them into a transitional housing space, whatever that might look like, you know, for the individual. So, you know, those two things, I think, in conjunction are going to be really important, just to say, you know, how are we going to staff this place? Got to have the right resources, got to have the right people there, compassionate people that know the strife of the homeless population locally and know how to work with them and work with them in a way that, you know, folks are receptive to receiving services and receiving help as well. So, you know, that's going to be, I think, one of the main obstacles is, yeah, just finding the right people for the job. Hopefully we will, you know, be able to staff that and get it going. But, you know, Arcata House Partnership is already, you know, running at full steam already. So hopefully we'll be able to find them a little bit of extra help to run some programs like this. So,
And you guys are giving some funding, additional funding to them too, I believe, as part of those ARPA funds. So yeah, I even realized like maybe we didn't quite explain what a safe parking program is and all of that, but in case people didn't, in case it wasn't obvious, in that it's essentially like a space where you allow people to park and then also potentially camp, just, you know, legally, and just invite the people who are doing that elsewhere in the city to come and do it in this space. And then, like, kind of like happened in the early days of the pandemic, where we set up a couple of them temporarily, but these would be a little bit more established than those parking lots that we had kind of near the plaza, near the transit center, where they didn't really have any amenities. They were just a space for tents to be set up, but this would be like bathrooms, probably food coming there and things like that. So
yeah, exactly. And part of it, yeah, would be to fund to, you know, make sure everybody can have a meal in the morning. And then, yeah, you know, eventually get water, electric there, especially so, you know, RVs could have hookups if they need to. And then also, you know, make sure it is a place, you know, where people can get services that they need, talk to people that they need, and also, I mean, feel safe, because that's a concern of a lot of, you know, homeless folks locally of, you know, yeah, why do you camp in front of the bank every night? And why is all your stuff in front of our bank? Well, there's cameras and there's lights. And, you know, I know that I'm comfortable here and not going to be attacked or be have my stuff stolen from me or whatever it might be. And so being able to, you know, have somebody that works there to keep it a safe space, and then also, you know, be able to create something where, you know, hopefully it's a step towards community and, you know, these people working together to make it a better space also. So
Well, I know that also just developing, you know, housing in general is a really big focus for CADA right now. And in addition to giving, you know, homeless people a place to live, we need to just build more places for everybody to live. And recently the city has been addressing this, you know, by developing, has plans to develop this part of town, being referred to as the Gateway District. Which is basically like a big part of town kind of that includes and surrounds the Creamery District. That's sort of a oversimplification, but that the city is hoping to rezone for mixed use development. Like basically the city has ended up with some properties that are zoned for just industrial use and things that we don't really need, and we need to figure out a way to be able to use them for housing, which we do need. I don't exactly know what my question is. What's your take on, what's your take on all of this?
Well, we got the chance, we had, it was like our special meeting, but of the council, but we all went on the walking tour of this Gateway and Phil development area, and kind of, you know, just walked down 7th Street through Arcata by also where they're building that new building that's supposed to be done by the end of the year. I will say probably the most shocking thing I learned on that walking tour was that new building that they're building there. I think it has something like 48 units, I want to say. I don't remember the exact number, but, you know, not that many in comparison to the number of applications that they received. For something like 48 units, they have already received 1,200 applications for those units.
Oh my God. You're thinking of the Danco building on, what is it, J?
Yeah, on 7th and I. Yeah, there, right in front of the
1,200 applications?
Wow. And so it's not
if you ever wanted to like say that there's not a housing crisis in Humboldt, like that statistic should tell you that there is a housing crisis in this county, because there are 1,200 people trying to move into this apartment building that, you know, has 50 at the most units, right? Like it's insane. And, you know, and so seeing, you know, as you walk through this area, you notice, okay, why Amerigas? Why this industrial building? This, you know, there's a mini storage. You know, why are all these things taking up valuable center in the downtown of Arcata, you know? Yeah. And Arcata's in a time where it's growing. The university is growing. Just in general, a lot more people are moving up here because climate refuge and just, you know, it's getting so expensive in the Bay Area that people are pushing north. But, you know, the center of downtown has begun to expand, especially out, towards the Creamery, you know, and this is my neighborhood in Arcata too. I live, you know, right smack in the middle, basically, of this infill area that they're talking about. But like, you see it and it really, I think personally that this, this is what needs to happen, because, you know, there's all these industrial areas that don't really make sense in the middle of our downtown. And that if we want to live in a community that is clean and walkable and safe, you know, let's build our housing, you know, where the people already want to be. So, you know, there's so much potential within this area to kind of, you know, rethink it and make it, you know, what we want to right now. And I think now more than ever is like the time. So
I've read some of the reports of how these walking tours go, and it sounds like, you know, there are some strong voices in opposition to, you know, just the growth that seems necessary to accommodate everything that Arcata, you know, wants to be and the direction it's going. Like, but you say, you know, you live in this neighborhood and you are not opposed to just kind of a massive development push.
I'm looking out my window. I can see the top of the Danco building right now.
Yeah, how do you feel about it?
The green wrap on the top. You know, and my partner works at Heart of Humble and, you know, has to see it every day. And, you know, hopefully it's going to be done soon because it's been kind of not great for business. But, but you know, I don't know. Yeah, there was a lot of people saying during the meeting, well, what about the view of the hills? It's like, you're in the middle of downtown. Just drive to the hills if you want the view of the hills. You know, and they're like, oh, what about the view of the ocean? It's like, what view? There's a big gross industrial building in the way. Might. Like, I don't, you know, and
who in downtown Kearney has a view of the ocean?
You know, and it's hard for me to relate to that sometime. And you know, I think it is because I'm young. I am a young person living in Arcata. I see the potential for growth in this community and I see the potential for success in this community, you know, and I feel like, I don't know, we're kind of stuck right now because people don't have anywhere to live and people want to move here and our college is growing, but it's just like, where did they go? And then everybody's so mad that there's homelessness and that people are living in their cars and that it feels overcrowded. Well, you got to get on board then with the options that are going to help, you know, fix these problems.
We have a long storied, proud tradition of NIMBYism in Humboldt and often in Arcata.
Arcata really is the rules with that, I feel. And I do, I understand. And I think it's Arcata, you know, it's like up until probably this development of that Danco building, you know, the tallest building we have in Arcata is the Jacoby Storehouse. It's like three
stories. Well, and currently our laws do not allow for a building to be that tall.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting too. Like our laws say that you can't, like at least on the back side of the storehouse where it's like four stories, it's something like 70 something feet, something like that. Like our laws don't even allow you to build that high.
Well, what are we going to do about that, council member?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, we're in a pretty pivotal time right now because it's been, you know, 20 years since Arcata's general plan has been updated. And so really we're working to update the general plan, work to integrate this infill development plan and kind of make, you know, a comprehensive plan for, you know, building housing while also, you know, keeping Arcata a nice, safe, walkable community that, you know, is concerned about trails, that cares about nature and the environment around it. I mean, also we are obviously having to mitigate and address climate change issues, you know, especially if we are planning on, you know, building in the bottoms area, you know, I guess it's not really the bottoms, but you know, the flatlands
that are way.
Close to the bottom. Yeah. I know I'm pointing this way.
I know.
Like you can see, it really is. It's right over there. I swear.
She's. For those of you that can't see the council member, she's flailing her arms in the general direction of the bottoms.
But I mean, and so thinking about that, especially, you know, another huge project the city is working on right now is updating the wastewater treatment plant and, you know, putting in safeguards for climate change with that and worrying about sea level rise. You know, so all of these things have to kind of work together and weave into one idea. And of course, you know, thinking about climate change, thinking about, you know, green transportation, green buildings, electrifying buildings, clean energy while, you know, working on this infill plan, while creating new developments that, you know, should be eco-friendly, should, you know, be able to provide mixed uses and green space near them, hopefully. The one part of the infill development plan that I felt a little wary about, they want to K Street and L Street, which L Street doesn't even go all the way to Samoa currently, that runs kind of parallel to where the trail is, the Bay Trail. And so basically they want to extend L Street all the way to Samoa and make K Street one way and L Street one way. Which I think that's a fine idea, but they want to make each of them two lanes, which is kind of counterintuitive to the idea of wanting to decrease the number of people relying on their own personal vehicles in Arcata and make a more walking and transit centric, you know, kind of environment. So I think, you know, making them one way is a great idea and extending that road's a great idea, but I'd really like to see, you know, one car lane and then dedicated bike lane, dedicated, you know, sidewalk, and keep that walking trail and, you know, make it more pedestrian, more bike friendly, especially in the downtown area. I mean, you know, a lot of this housing that they're proposing building is going to house a lot of students, house a lot of people that are working directly in the downtown area, you know, to make it an easy, safe place for them to walk and or bike to work, to school, whatever it might be, you know, because Arcata is a walking town. I mean, really, you can, it doesn't take more than 15 to 20 minutes to get anywhere. And most places it takes 5 minutes. So
yes,
you know, to try to make that, you know, more people's mindset, I think is going to be really important in the future of Arcata as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I had not heard about that K and L Street thing before. And now I'm gonna be looking into that, because that's gonna be an uproar. People want to like that.
And they're gonna be doing more of these walking tours, you know, as this plan is being developed. And so I recommend taking one of them. I mean, I learned a lot, you know, and I'm on the council. I should know a lot. So I learned even more and, you know, got to ask a lot of questions and also hear a lot of feedback from community members. Yeah. Just, you know, we had people from this Coalition for Responsible Transportation. We had big developers. We had people from construction companies. We had, you know, just concerned citizens. There was a lot of, you know, wide range of people. So it's really interesting just, you know, to be able to hear all of those different viewpoints while actually out there and seeing, oh yeah, this is where that would be. Well, maybe that doesn't work. Or no, I would like that. I think that could be four stories. That would be fun.
Yeah.
And so looking at all of these different possibilities, with the community is really cool. So.
It's good to hear that people have been attending, because, you know, it's hard like to get the word out for whatever reason about these types of these outreach efforts. And and then people are like, I never heard anything about this. You know, just every time there's something.
Every time, no matter what it is, somebody's mad they didn't hear about it.
It seems like the cities try everything, but I mean, no matter what you do, a development goes in, somebody is going to be like mad about it and be like, I never heard about this until just now. But
then you weren't paying attention.
But so if you care, if you live in Arcata, go to these things, be a part of it, to be a part of the process. Don't be that person who gets mad when you're hearing about a building going into your neighborhood, because you never heard about it.
And I felt like I was pretty, like, you know, decently aware and civically involved before I ran for council. But like, now that I understand what it is like to be civically involved and understand everything that's happening in our community, there's a lot going on. And there are a lot of meetings, a lot of really interesting people that are, you know, super involved in our development and, you know, our planning and everything like that. And there's a lot of opportunities for citizens to be involved too. So if you're like ever sitting out there, here's the plug, and like wondering, hey, how can I get involved? What committee? I mean, I don't know, call up your council member or go down to City Hall and say, hey, I'm interested in streets. I'm interested in planning. Is there a committee I could be on? Is there a meeting that I could attend? How can I make public comment on this? I mean, there's just so many different ways to get involved. And like, I think the more people that care about the community and get involved, the happier you're going to be, the better outcomes that we're going to have, and, you know, the more positivity around these developments that we're going to see. And so, I just, you know, get involved.
When you're out there, when you're having your guided mushroom or ayahuasca trip, and you suddenly have a realization that you are very interested in city planning,
go do it.
So I feel like we're gonna get more involvement moving forward with some of the changes that are being made.
Well, so we're getting kind of near the allotted time that we have for this, but I thought, you know, just I just wanted to ask you, you know, you obviously, your time on council began during a pesky global pandemic, and, you know, this is, as I said, like, this is the first time that you and I have spoken at length, and so I was just kind of, you know, just kind of abroad, like, how you doing, like, how has this past year on council been for you?
How are you holding
up? I'm holding up. It's been good, and it's been an interesting experience, but I really love it in the sense that, you know, I am a high school history teacher. That is my wheelhouse. I don't often get to be involved in conversations about housing and planning or conversations about, you know, we all get to serve on these different boards. I'm on the board for the Railroad Coast Energy Authority. And I don't often get to be part and have a seat at the table, you know, talking about offshore wind or, you know, anything like that. Even though, you know, I consider myself a lifelong learner, a voracious reader of news and history. And I love all of these things and I'm interested in them and I care about them, but you know, normally as an everyday citizen, I wouldn't necessarily like get to be a part of it. So, I mean, I think the best part of it for me is just getting to be a part of it all and kind of see this development in a community that I really care about. You know, it's been interesting, obviously, managing working full time, especially now that the school year has started again. But last year, you know, even teaching online and teaching on Zoom through COVID and being on council and the Zoom meetings on council, I mean, everything was Zoom all the time, which can be exhausting. So I'm really glad now that at least we did get to have one sweet, sweet meeting where we got to with the public and the whole council in person.
And talked about the resolution.
And it was like the most hyped up meeting ever, too.
Yeah, I was watching that, watching back on that to report about the upcoming one and going, oh my gosh, wow, I forgot that we had this little window where like meetings went back to in person and people weren't even wearing masks. And wow, remember when that was happening?
I saw you guys put the little caveat on the caption. This was the one meeting where they got to not wear masks.
You know? Yeah.
this was back in July. We swear it wasn't
recently. Exactly.
Well, because we know.
Yeah, people try to get us on this stuff like that.
Why they're
in the comments. Yeah. But you know, it's just been really great too. Yeah. And we've gone through a lot of changes, especially, you know, with there being a pretty new council and then also losing Sophia. And now, you know, finally being back to five and having Meredith join us has been so great. I feel like we're just very well balanced now and we have a lot of great things to talk about and, you know, can see each other's viewpoints and really, you know, we've got some of us that might be a little more go get them, a little more I don't know, fiery, extra hyper liberal. I mean, we're all, it's Arcata, we're all liberal. Wherever you fall,
thank you for admitting that.
Have,
you know,
whether you're
hyper
liberal or just regular liberal. Totally.
But, you know, we also have, like, I appreciate how, you know, Mayor Watson keeps us very practical and keeps us, you know, grounded in the fiscal responsibility. I feel like a lot of the time when I'm like, yeah, let's spend money on that. People need it. Let's do it. You know, but like to be able to have this really nice, well-rounded council, I feel, you know, we've gotten to a good point. It's been, you know, I'm almost a year, a little less than a year now at this point still. But, you know, I feel like we're getting into it. And I think now that we can really, you know, get down to it and get some work done.
I get no sense that this work has exhausted you. You seem pretty jazzed up and energized and ready to just continue on and keep tackling things.
Well, thank you. It has. I feel like it's been a long week for myself, but you know, I'm glad to
I want to thank you for taking the time to have one more Zoom meeting with a couple of weirdos. One more thing I wanted to ask you before you went. You know, we had your fellow council member Emily Goldstein on here a couple months back, and we basically asked her where her favorite place to eat is, and I will say that she totally whiffed on the answer by naming a restaurant that was in Eureka. So I would say, like, Loco should not be doing this, but we wanted to help you, you know, kick off your reelection campaign right here. Like, where does council member Schaefer grub down?
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. Am I trying to be fancy? Am I just grabbing a burger? I'll tell you after this, I've got a date with the girls at Septentrio to go get a glass of wine and a snack from the Nosh. Always a favorite. I'm, you know, right down the street from campground. I can, you know, not always afford that, but oh my gosh, it's always one of my favorite dining experiences. But I am probably my favorite. What would I do? Honestly, I would have to say Pho Huang. I like a good bowl of pho. The owner who runs that, she is the nicest lady I have ever met and always remembers me every time I come in. So accommodating, so fast, they never mess up my order. I love it. So,
I like this. I love Asian food. I'm with you.
Can you take council member Goldstein aside and maybe coach a little bit, just like,
no,
walking places, you know, if I can walk there, I love going. I'm also right around the corner from the burger joint. I go there all the time. Another favorite, you know, am I trying to get Mexican food? You'll find me at Carmela's. So it depends, but.
All right. I like this. Like your local restaurants. Well, thank you again, council member Schaefer, for joining us. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for all the hard work that you guys are doing there. I have to say that I don't know if it's been the pandemic or just the new council members, but like, whether people love or hate what you're doing, you guys have been knocking stuff like off. You've just been, feel like, working really hard, and just you know, it seems like you hit the ground running. And so, you know, we'll talk to you again in 3 years and see how you're feeling, but.
Awesome. Well, thank you though. And it feels good to, you know, hear that too from folks. Because sometimes I only read the comment section on the Lost Coast Outpost.
Don't do that.
Feel real sad about what I'm doing.
Don't do it.
Don't do that.
It's not reality.
Yeah. So, yeah. So everybody, if you're interested in what we were talking about today, you know, make sure to check out Decriminalize Nature Humboldt too. And
which is going to be morph into what again?
The Humboldt Psychedelic Society.
Or the Humboldt Psychedelic Society.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we're definitely going to be having more events coming to an Arcata near you. So.
To an Arcata near you. Awesome. All right. Great. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much.
Okay, that's it. I have other things to do now, Steph. I have to go find a tree to sit underneath.
And do some mushrooms.
And think about just all the ways in which I value you as a podcast co-host.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I've actually been on mushrooms throughout this whole episode. So now I'm going to go make some tea and come down. Thank you so much to council member Schaefer for joining us and shedding some light on this subject. And I think that I'm still saying it's fun, but it also is serious and very important to some people. And of course, there's so many other things going on in Arcata too. And I really appreciated Councilmember Schaefer just saying like, all right, we got that done. And now let's move on to some other like more pressing issues.
I'd say this, there are so few arenas of life where I feel like we're making good forward progress. So we'll take a win.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, with that, enjoy your time under your tree, Goff. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And come join us again next week. Stay safe out there.
Okay, Steph, we got one more of these Fat Bowl ads we are blessed to be able to do. I have the copy for it right here. You want to do it? Should we do this?
Yeah, of course. I'm so excited. I love Fat Bowl.
Okay, well, here's how this ad reads. He goes, hey, Humboldt. Come down to Fat Bull store at 1618 G Street, Arcata, and check out their new designs. They have clothing for men and women, and they maintain a clean and healthy store.
Oh, well, that's good.
Digression. I think like that's a wink, wink. Like, hey, we're trying to not have COVID in our store. That's how I read that. Okay, but anyway, come check out deals on disc golf equipment, art supplies, gifts, and accessories. And 25% off on all smoking supplies, which I think they're talking about weed, which you can't say that. I think this is for a radio ad, but this is a podcast, so we can just say weed.
We can say weed all day long, baby.
Come get your weed smoking supplies.
What, are you not allowed to say weed on the radio? Whatever, anyway.
Well, you know, okay. If you're interested in branding or merchandise for your business, their custom printing services will have you covered. Get your brand on t-shirts, hats, hoodies, lighters, keychains, or just about anything else you can think of. That's good. I could think of a lot.
I could, but not right now.
But not right now. Okay. Fat Bowl, again, located on G Street in Arcata, across from Northtown Coffee. Fat Bowl is a local, you know him, you love him. Go give him pay him a visit and tell him that Stephanie sent you.